This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you all so much for the support and for tuning in to the Planet Microcap Podcast. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bobby K. Kraft. That's BobbyKKraft. You are listening to episode 14 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Before we get started with our next interview on the Planet Microcap Podcast, I wanted to catch you up on what we featured on StockNewsNow.com recently. We featured articles highlighting video interviews with the following companies: Tell Instrument Electronics, TIK on the NYSE market, DataWin Limited, DW on the TSX, Quest Solution Inc., QUES on the OTCQB, Dyadic International, DYAI on the OTCQX, Amaranthus Bioscience Holdings, AMBS on the OTCQX, JetPay Corporation, JTPY on the NASDAQ, ViewRay Inc., VRAY on the OTCQB, TerraTech Corp., TRTC on the OTCQX, Vertex Energy Inc., VTNR on the NASDAQ, and BioLargo Inc., BLGO on the OTCQB, as well as an SNN Q&A with Caladrius Biosciences Inc., CLBS on the NASDAQ. We also published articles from the Microcap Review Magazine Summer Fall 2015 issue featuring the following companies: First Mining Finance Corp., FF on the TSX Venture, and Millrock Resources Inc., MRO on the TSX Venture. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Maj Swaydan from Geo Investing. I met Maj at a conference recently, and we had a great conversation about this concept that I wanted to learn more about. The concept being information arbitrage. On the program, we've talked about the importance of doing your due diligence, which includes reading an issuer's press releases, SEC filings, also including where to find all this information, as well as why understanding this material to the best of your ability can help you gain an edge when investing. In this interview, Maj stresses the importance of reacting to and finding public information before other market participants. In addition to learning more about information arbitrage, we also discuss his research techniques, the difference between value stocks and growth stocks, and of course, I ask for his advice for new microcap investors, as I do with everybody who we have on the program. Thank you again for tuning into episode 14 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Please enjoy my interview with Maj Swaydan, but first, a word from our sponsor.
A comprehensive streaming of market data, research, and portfolio management application for you. QuoteStream is a real-time streaming quotes and research system designed for the day trader, retail investor, institutional investor, both new and old. QuoteStream offers low latency, tick-by-tick data, advanced charting, comprehensive technical analysis, news, and research. With no software to install and no servers to maintain, QuoteStream is the ideal solution for you. Go to StockNewsNow.com and start your free 7-day trial. Click the QuoteStream banner in the header or real-time quotes in the nav bar to get started building and managing your investments.
For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I have Maj Swaydan from Geo Investing on the program. Maj, welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast.
Hey, thanks, Robert. Great to be here.
It's great to have you, and thank you for coming on. So, as is tradition, when we start off each episode of the podcast, I need to know your background. Tell me about yourself.
Sure. Well, I'm 45 years old. I went to Temple University. I graduated in 1992. I worked at Vanguard for a couple of years out of college. And in 1994, in February 94, I became a full-time investor. And I founded GeoInvesting.com. I was a co-founder, actually, of GeoInvesting.com in 2008.
All right, so we're talking about microcaps. That's what we do here at the Planet Microcap Podcast. And so I want to know, how did you start investing in microcaps, and why'd you stick with it?
Well, it's an interesting story. You know, actually, when I was in a high school before I entered college, I was taking an economics class, and there, my teacher at the time was ran an investment contest, you know, fake money, of course, and it was $100,000 of funny money, and I really had never been involved with the stock market until, or you know, although my dad had kind of invested in the stock market, was a casual investor, so you know, I went to my teacher and I showed him one of my companies I wanted to, you know, put in my portfolio. And, you know, it had a funny little symbol next to it. It was a technology company, and it had a VJ next to it, I think it was. I didn't know what it meant. I asked my teacher, hey, you know, I want to, I mean, this is a nice little technology company. They do disk storage. It seems like a pretty sexy industry. He goes, yeah, you should put all your money, all the whole portfolio in it. So I put all my money in that stock, and a few days later, I come back and can't find the symbol anymore. And, you know, I went to my teacher and said, hey, what's going on here? Did the stock get acquired? Did I win the contest? And he goes, no, you know, actually, you learned your first lesson in investing in the stock market. You know, do your own research, because the stock went basically chapter, you know, bankruptcy. They were going through a Chapter 11 reorganization. So I lost all my money. So that was my first introduction in the stock market. And, you know, when I went to college, you know, ironically, I wanted to be an attorney. And my, obviously, my first attempt at investing even was fake money. It wasn't good. So, you know, during my first couple years of college, I decided I really didn't want to be an attorney anymore. And I picked up a book called One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. And it really, really spoke to me.
That was my first book, too.
And I think it's a lot of our, you know, a lot of minor cap investors love that book, right? It's like, it's almost like the investing Bible for a lot of us.
And the intelligent investor, of course.
Yes, of course. Yes, yes. So, you know, look, he basically laid out a great approach, a simple way of investing. And I said, you know, let me give this another shot again, but this time with real money. And ironically, the first stock I bought was that same stock that I bought in the investment challenge. It came out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and I made you know a good 60-70% of my money on my first stock. So I became addicted very fast, very quickly. And that was like really my first, you know, my introduction into the stock market then. And you know, the Meyer Cap investing was an evolution of that. You know, I continually wanted to gain a kind of a competitive advantage over other investors in the market, and I just found it easier to do in the micro cap space. And the stories are much more less complicated than the bigger companies. They're easier to understand. Your access to management's a lot better, and access to information is, you know, if you know where to find it, you know, it's hard to find sometimes, and then it gets distributed through the market a lot slower than larger companies, information from larger companies. So that's how I really started getting involved in this micro cap investing space.
So one of the reasons I really wanted to speak with you is along those lines about the information that you get from micro caps and just, I guess, even from the market at large. And it's this concept that you have that I've seen frequently on your website that you talk about called information arbitrage. So I really want to know, what do you mean by this, and how does it relate to microcap stocks?
Well, look, it's a, you know, I love that word because it kind of, well, you know, we define it as, you know, it's a way to basically, you know, find information where no one else is looking, so that we can act on that information in a timely fashion, quicker than any other investors can. And, you know, the whole concept of investing in the stock market, when it comes down to it, is getting a competitive advantage. You know, at any level of expertise, whether you're a beginner, an intermediate, or advanced, I mean, I think you'll agree with me that, hey, you know, your goal is to get into a stock and, you know, that you think is undervalued before others do, right? And the better you are finding this information before others are, the better your advantage is. And that's a key, and you know, and when you're looking at smaller companies, and I think it's no secret, anyone who's invested in microcap companies knows that, you know, if you're going to try and dissect information from a larger company like an IBM or something, I mean, you're you're gonna be analyzing that information at best as quick as a larger company is going, a larger institution is going to that wants to buy the stock. So you're at a disadvantage. Now more than ever, microcap companies are kind of getting ignored by the by institutions and brokers since 2008, really. So the amount of time it takes for information that's disseminated by these smaller companies to be to get reflected in their stock prices is taking longer and longer, giving us an opportunity to get in before others get in. And the key to this whole thing is knowing where to find the information, knowing how to analyze it, knowing what investors, how investors are going to react to that information. And it's just, the essence of information arbitrage.
So my curiosity when it comes to this phrase also is that I want to see it. How does it work in action? Like, let's say, for instance, we did an interview with a representative from PR Newswire, and we talked about the importance of press releases and SEC filings. So keeping it on that from an easier example, why is it important to understand this concept when you're doing your due diligence? Is it just looking at the press release and really reading the SEC filings and then just keeping in your mind the differences potentially in language that could lead to a good or bad reason as to make that investment decision?
Yeah, that's a good, you have a good point there that the information you're looking for could be a piece of information that positively influences the stock price or could potentially negatively influence it. And what we're really looking for, we're looking for what's not obvious. The press release is what's obvious. And sometimes, you have information in the press release that no one's really kind of seen or not really paid attention to. And that's the easiest kind, but what we're looking for really is information that's not in the press release, that's somewhere else. Because, that's where the further and further the investor has to travel down the information chain, the harder it's going to be for him to find it, and the easier it's going to be for us to get, find that information, because we know where to look, and hopefully make it, get an idea of this, of an attractive investment opportunity for us. So, when I can give, so our best scenarios are when we've come across a press release that's, somewhat mundane, but there's a little clue in the press release that says, hey, there's reason for us to go look for other information, to get a better understanding of the story. And I can give you a great example of one of these if you want.
Oh, please do. I'd love to hear it.
There's a company that is called Evans & Sutherland. It's Evans & Sutherland Computer Corporation. Pretty, nothing sexy about that term. about that name of the company. And, in February of 2014...
Hold on, Maj, real quick. Are you currently a shareholder of the company?
Yes, I am, yes. And we ended up actually, we bought the stock in February, and we're still a shareholder. The stock at the time was trading around 14 cents, and actually today's trading near a high of about, a buck or buck five. And this is a great example of what we're trying to, information arbitrage, because These guys were, reported numbers in their earnings in a press release. I forgot what quarter it was in February 14. And, look, they had they were doing about $6 to $8 million in revenues per quarter. That was kind of their run rate for a while. And, but we noticed in the press release, what this company does is they service they make equipment for the planetariums and, the iTechs of the world, right? Some of the software and some of the projection equipment that goes into these facilities. So it's not really a huge industry in a fast growing industry, but it's there. And we noticed some verbiage in the press release that, the backlog was, healthy, and they were losing a lot of money, but that the reason they were losing money had to do with this pension liability that was in that was past due, and that they weren't able to make good on, and it was a problem for the past 3-4 years or something like that. And they kind of made a statement in the press release that they were trying to maybe resolve the issue, and they're getting closer to resolving the issue. And so that was that little clue said, all right, maybe let's try and see if we can find out more about where they are in this process, because it wasn't as obvious in the press release. And then we started to read the SEC filings, and we read the 10-Qs, the 10-Ks, and we went back and we read the last maybe 8 filings to see if we could see a progression of how this issue was being addressed and if it was going to resolve soon. And we noticed pretty direct language in the most recent 10-Q at the time that they're on the cusp of resolving this issue. And that they think they're going to resolve it. They're going to this debt obligation is going to be basically totally wiped off their balance sheet at some point in the near future. And once you remove this obligation, their equity is going to go from negative to near positive. And that their earnings per share were going to turn solidly profitable. And we figured out maybe to the tune of 8 to 10 cents. A quarter EPS run rate. We didn't see a big growth opportunity in terms of growth opportunity in terms of the industry they were serving. But we thought, hey, there has to be a repricing of the stock eventually from a near bankruptcy situation to a survival at least. And eventually, in this year, I think it was in maybe August this year. They announced officially that they resolved the pension obligation. And the stock was amazing. The stock didn't even react right away, because when they announced the resolution of this thing, it was during an earnings press release, and they still showed a GAAP earning loss. So you would have to do the calculation to find out what really was the non-GAAP number. And when we say non-GAAP, we mean stripping out the pension liability, see what they would have made in the quarter without it. It turned out to be 8 cents, like we had thought. So eventually the market started working through this press release and working through the filings, and the stock, is sitting around $1 right now. So that's just a great example of, being able to get in the stock, 14 cents, even, 20 cents, 50 cents, because it was walking up slowly, as basically they were telling you, almost a guarantee. And they were even putting that some of the recent filings before the resolution, they were actually issuing hard dates when they thought it would be resolved. So that to me, and that was it. If this was a large cap or big cap company, this opportunity would not have occurred. The market would have known this was going to get resolved, and it would have bid the price up pretty quickly, probably.
So my question now is also on the other side of the coin, and without maybe naming an example of the company, the name of the company, where do you see doing this type of research and extra homework helping you to make sure that you don't make a bad choice?
Yeah, so we call that portfolio protection. It's something that it's unique about our website. We help our members find opportunities to make money going long stocks. We also pride ourselves on being able to alert them of, hey, if you're going to be long these stocks, be aware of the following risks that are present here, real risk. Maybe they might even go short. So it's hard to find both in one outfit. But a great example is, I think the name, I think it was called Audience. I think the symbol was ADNC, but don't quote me. I don't own the stock right now, or I'm not sure I own the stock. But it was an IPO, I think 2 years ago, maybe.
And you never owned the stock, right?
Did I? I might have been short a few seconds at the time. Yeah, I was short at that time. Yes.
Okay.
But it was a very short period because the catalyst that occurred happened pretty quickly. But so basically, they make technology to put in cell phones. To improve the voice quality of the phone, and they were touting this great technology. Maybe it was good technology, but I was pretty intrigued by it at the time, maybe to go long. And I think the stock was trading around maybe $20 at the time, and So I wanted to learn more about the company, and I decided to read the SEC filings, and I found out that, hey, there's two issues here with this company. One is that when I looked at the past history of the financials and the margins and the sales, although I might have seen some pretty interesting good trends in the top line, the revenue growth over time, their margins were all over the place. So so early in the cycle of a product introduction, their margins were high, and then as their product progressed over time, the margins would come down, and it was a very fast cycle, which you see a lot with these tech companies that provide the technology for the cell phones and such things. So but that was number one, and number two, I mean, they had a really their Apple was their one of their biggest customers. I think it was at the time, I want to say over 80% of the business. So that's a big customer concentration risk. So I was, and then I noticed all some lawsuits, and there's some patent lawsuits. So as I was reading more and more of the story, I said, and this is something I need to go short, not long. And it was a very small position at the time because I didn't know at the time necessarily, what the relationship was with Apple. But, within a month of doing that due diligence, they came out and they announced, hey, we lost our, Apple's dropping us. And the stock went from 19 to, I think, $7 in one day or something. That's a great example of the other side, you can't, especially investing in large cap companies, you need to be extra diligent. You need to do the extra research and just the press release to see what's going on with the company, because there's a lot of things that look great on the surface. And that when you go look deeper, you can find a lot of red flags that, as an investor, you need to know. So, and the market right now, and since 2008, and these micro caps, they're a lot less liquid than they were before. The market just punishes you a little quicker than ever before in some of these companies.
Okay, so you kind of hit on something else that I wanted to ask you about. For due diligence and doing your research. So what are some of your research techniques when looking at microcap stocks? How do you define proper due diligence?
We don't do anything fancy, okay? We use old school tools, but it's basically, to me, it's addressing what's the challenge. The challenges you have, the number's different, but up to 20,000 stocks maybe your potential universe, here in the U.S., and then maybe 8,000 to 10,000, wire caps. And when you're looking across all exchange, the exchanges and the OTC and the bulletin board. So, the first challenge is for us is to be able to whittle that universe down to a manageable level of stocks. And, we do it using a variety of ways, and we look at, we have a momentum screens. We read every microcap press release that comes out, earnings press release that comes out, we look at SEC filings routinely. We're participating in conference calls and reading conference call transcripts. I mean, conference calls and transcripts are a great way to find information arbitrage opportunities. There's just so much information in them that's not often in a press release, and we've had some really home runs in that area. And then we use screens to a limited extent because we're not robotic here. We believe being very intimate with the stocks we're looking at and doing our research. So we use screens sometimes just to get us started sometimes. But if a screen pops out something that's really good or really bad, we're not taking it at face value. But that's But the biggest, I think, one of the most important parts of the due diligence process really is the interviews with management teams. And I really think it's one of the best ways to understand the company you're potentially investing in or not investing in. And I think it's very important to understand that process. And when you're doing, when you are conducting an interview, or we do, it's very important that before you call management teams, you've done a little bit of homework to sound like you know what you're talking about. And they respect that a lot more. So that's, you know, that's in a nutshell kind of our little circle of due diligence there, how we do things.
You know, I also got to ask, I mean, when you talk about interviewing management, you know, how do they react when you come at them and say, you know, by the way, I found this information arbitrage that you may not have been aware of, or, you know, or maybe you are, but, you know, how do you respond to that? You know, how do they respond to you?
Well, I mean, like, you know, they're aware of the information, of course, but they, you know, you get different reactions. Sometimes these managers just don't get it, that they should have talked about it in the press release, that it would help their company. If it's positive news, if it's bad news, I just don't want to talk about it. I mean, the reaction depends, but usually, you know, the good companies are like, hey, we're just running a company here, and, you know, we just, our obligation is to run a company, put out a press release, talk about the company in some respect, but they don't want to tout the stock and don't want to tout the company, and you can respect that. But, you know, they definitely like that we're able to go find the information. They respect that, and they see that as, hey, as a sign of, you know, we're serious investors.
And, okay, so now changing topics just a little bit, because this is something that both we've talked about on the podcast a little bit, and then also you write about on your website, and that's this idea of growth versus value stocks. You know, so can you explain the difference between these two?
Well, yeah, look, you know, you have growth companies, you have value companies, you have growth stocks, you have value stocks. I mean, people use those, you know, terms, you know, interchangeably sometimes, but, you know, we define a growth company as a company that's in a hot or sexy industry where the industry or the market's growing at a pretty quick, you know, clip. Versus a value stock, maybe a company that's not a growth company, that's maybe not in the greatest industry, but has a really good, you know, market share or good way of penetrating the market. Or there's ways they can maybe find their ways, or they're looking to find growth in a market that's not growing well or stable. As opposed to a growth stock and a value stock, so, you know, we define a growth stock as a stock that's selling at a very high multiple. That's where the company is actually still growing nicely, but where the stock is trading at a very high premium. Versus a value stock, we define that as a company that's just selling below what we think it's, you know, intrinsically worth. So that's our difference. And what we're doing is unique. And what we do is we try to find company, we call it growth plus value. We're trying to find stocks that are growing, of companies that are often in a favorable industry, selling well below what we think their intrinsic value is, at low PEs, and also many times paying a dividend. That's one scenario. The other scenario we're looking at is companies that might not be in a growth industry, but for some reason are still selling below their intrinsic value. And a lot of investors have this misconception about microcap stocks, that you can't find growth and value in the same stock. I mean, when I say value, I also mean, you know, a lot of value stocks pay dividends too. And you can find microcap stocks that will have a growth potential, you know, and that pay a dividend. And that's what we talk about also, the growth plus value proposition. And we're looking for that company that's been basically being valued, not being valued as a growth company. It's being valued as a low-priced, non-growth situation that's paying a dividend, that's about to enter this new phase of growth, because either the industry is going through a cyclical change, or that the company is doing things differently that's going to allow them to grow their EPS at a pretty nice clip. And those are some of the best opportunities, because you're basically getting a growth situation potentially, like a stock being valued as a value company or a value stock that's going to soon maybe attain a premium multiple and start being, you know, priced as a growth company.
Is this sector agnostic? Because, you know, at first thought, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, what about healthcare or mining companies where, you know, most of them are pre-revenue? You know, can those be labeled as either value or growth stories or companies?
Look, I guess, you know, if you're pre-revenue, you know, I don't think, you know, it's a tough one there. We know we're looking at companies that already have established, you know, some revenue, but yeah, I would think that if you're pre-revenue and you're the company's probably going to define itself as a potential growth company, you know. In terms of the stock itself, you know, value stock or growth stock in that situation, well, those stocks are probably trading at pretty high valuations, right? So I wouldn't consider them the value necessarily in terms of looking at the stock itself.
Right. So you're mostly specifically referring to technology, services, consumer goods types and industrial goods types companies that are generating revenue when we're referring to this.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I'll give you another example. I mean, there's a stock, you know, I can give you a couple examples, but, you know, there's a stock that did really well recently that we still own, actually. It's called Educational Development, EDUC. And, you know, we came across a stock around $4.50, $5 a share. We noticed it was paying a 7% dividend and that the company was about to go through a transformational period in terms of EPS growth and sales growth. So, you know, the stock was trading at, I think, a meager PE at the time and paying a 7% dividend. You know, now stock, maybe 3 months later, now sitting at $13, actually hit 18 not too long, or 17, 18 not too long ago. So that, but they were a book publisher. It's a very mundane industry, right? I don't think it's a growth industry, but they did certain things in their model that enabled them to start, you know, seeing a resurgence in their growth. So what you have there, you had a company that's not really a growth company, you know, selling at but that's about to enter a growth period, selling at, you know, a very depressed valuations and paying a dividend. So you're going to get both of the growth and kind of value thing there, the same stock. But, like, I mean, you can find a value stock in a sexy industry like technology, you know, if the valuation's right. So we don't really look too much at, you know, we're not focused so much on industry per se. You know, we're looking for good companies, and they, whatever category they might fall into, so be it. We avoid certain industries, and we do definitely avoid some of the industries that are unpredictable, you know, like the oil and gas and the, you know, mining and things like that.
So, okay. So I'm now getting to one of my favorite parts of the podcast that we always do, and that's with regard to your experience. So in your experience, what was the biggest or at least the most lasting lesson you've learned from investing in microcap stocks?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, there's so many things to look at here, but it's, and I touched upon it earlier, that the better you are knowing where to find information, the better you are at understanding what you're investing in, and the better you get at interviewing management and become intimate management, the better investor you will become. And that, to me, is the biggest lesson I've learned over time. And I mean, the way I interview a management team today is a lot different than the way I managed, you know, interviewed them 20, you know, over 20 years ago. And the better you are at that, the more respect you get from the management that you are interviewing. And you're just going to become a better investor. You're going to know the kind of questions to ask. You're going to know how to read, you know, read management teams. If, you know, when they give you an answer, if you're, how much faith you put in the answer they're giving to you. It's the biggest. It's one of the big competitive advantages. You can do well not interviewing. I guess you can do well to some extent not interviewing management teams, but you really put the icing in the cake learning that process.
Okay.
And, you know, there's also, you know, patience obviously is a big thing too. Being patient in the microcap sector is something you have to be, especially since 2008. There's less participation in the sector. And that's a new lesson I'm learning these days.
What is the key, in your opinion, to long-term investor success in microcap stocks? And along with that, you know, what's some advice that you would give to new microcap investors?
Well, I think, you know, again, patience. And again, you know, I think defining a process, you know, and, you know, I developed a process that worked for me. I decided I wanted to be a fundamental investor, and I tried to simplify the process. So I would definitely, you know, recommend, I guess, that, you know, new investors, you know, in the space, you know, read a book like Peter Lynch, or find a book that they can relate to and that it calls to them, and start to understand how to simplify the investment process as much as possible. I don't want to say it's easy, but the more you, like, for example, reducing your investment space universe to a certain amount of stocks. I mean, you know, defining what your buy and sell discipline is going to be, defining what you're looking for. It's very, very important. And not to be afraid, you know, not to be afraid to pick up the phone call and interview management teams. You should be doing, you should be doing that right away and learning that process. I think it's really, really important. So I think that sum it up, defining the investment process, learning how to interview management teams, and, you know, finding your niche, finding what, you know, what calls to you.
Okay, so, Maj, what is your website, and where can people go and follow you on social media?
My website that I co-founded is geoinvesting.com. That's G-E-O, investing.com. And the social media is Maj, M-A-J, Souedan, S-O-U-E-I-D-A-N. Is my last name. S-S-O-U-E-I-D-A-N.
Thank you, Maj. And Maj, what about Geo Investing has a Twitter handle too, right?
Yeah, let me it's at Geo Investing. That's all you gotta put there for that.
Yeah.
That'll work.
Cool.
And you can follow both. And my co-founder's handle is at Dan David. Mm-hmm. And by the way, mine is Maj Geo Investing. At Maj Geo Investing.
Got it. Okay, cool. All right, Maj, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation, learning more about information arbitrage. And, you know, I look forward to speaking with you soon.
I love it. Anytime. Have a great holiday.
You too, man. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you all for tuning in to the Planet Microcap podcast. And thank you, Maj, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast. Go to podbean.com and search Planet Microcap Podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet Microcap Podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, where we'll have our next week in review and have another exciting guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, please send an email to info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of StockNewsNow.com, the official microcap news source, and the Microcap Review magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet Microcap podcast. Happy New Year, everyone.